The Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, good day, folks. Hope everyone's wonderful today. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. And we're going to be thinking out loud today, dealing with the Declaration of Independence. And, you know, I wonder if people are that independent anymore, or has something else happened? Anyway, this is Revolution Radio. My name's LB Bork. Panelists today are Mike Gaddy and Dave Scorpio, as I call him. And we're going to be getting into things in a minute, but we have some housekeeping to take care of, as they say. Some people say that. I guess I say it once in a while. Yes, like I said, this is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. And we are listener supported. As you may know, we go out on several streams. I cannot cite those as well as Mitchell does, but they're out there. And if you're listening, we really appreciate that. And if you want to come and join us in the chat room, you can do that at the two addresses I just mentioned, freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. And you follow the instructions. It's down the page a bit, and just give us an email address, I think, is what it takes to register, and do that. But also, donations. You could really use them. We're not corporate sponsored. We're not controlled by any kind of, censorship that I know of, for the most part. Try to keep things clean in the mouth department, no swearing. Although I'm using current shit show 2020, because what we're experiencing right now is pretty bad. But anyway, back to donations. top of the page, there's a button up there. You can hit that. And just follow the instructions or do the old snail mail. It's at the bottom of the page. And those go to Terry Ackerman in Michigan. And you can find that address there. Very easy. I think that's the easier way. I'm getting tired of technology, to be honest with you. I liked it until they started censoring us and doing all kinds of things. The internet has really become cumbersome. Everyone's lazy, and it's taken over our lives. And I think that's part of what we're going to talk about today a little bit and how it's enslaved us. I don't think we should have the Declaration of Dependence now and not independence. And I think first I'll let Dave say something because Mike's going to be doing the introductory presentation today, so I don't want Dave sitting there too long, so how you doing, Dave?
Hey, Mr. LB, thanks for having me on, and I just want everyone to know I'm wearing a gray jumpsuit. I have my mask on. I'm on a bended knee, and I have a bottle of hand sanitizer right next to my mouth, so I'm all ready to go.
Cool. Yeah. Always good to be a little servient slave to whatever they got going on.
Well, apparently now, LB, it's part of your public duty to be a good slave. So let's everyone remember that.
Yeah. Why don't you tell the folks about your program? Because Mike's got a new program, and I'm going to let him talk about that. So let's hear about yours.
Yeah, Mike's coming on too, and I'm really, really happy to hear that. Mike's going to do a great show. The guy has so much information. It's like reading an encyclopedia when Mike's on the air.
Maybe one with Mike's more information.
On Saturdays from 2 to 4 p.m., Studio A, each and every week.
A is the place to be.
And that's the Scorpio Conspiracy Show.
Yep, yep. I have one too, but I'll talk about that after. Well, I'm going to let Mike get right into it. So I'm going to tell you about my program. It's on Tuesdays from 6 to 8. It's called The Ultimate Remedy, and it deals with basically remedy, but I've been having Mike on for the last several months. We're talking about foundational issues. That's what we try to hit. People don't understand maybe why we don't talk about current events. But part of PAC's always been about kind of doing what we need to do. And if people don't know what went wrong, they're going to stay enslaved to the system. That's what we're going to talk about today, dependency of the system.
Yeah, and I just want to say one last thing, LB. It's no longer a conspiracy theory. They talk about it openly on TV now, so it's no longer a theory.
Right. Oh, really? They do that. I don't watch television, so I'm kind of in the dark sometimes. Oh, YouTube?
Yeah, I have YouTube. I don't have TV.
I try to stay away from that, too, for the most part. Anyway, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, LB. Thanks for the round-robin discussion today. It's always great to be with you and Dave and John, too, whenever he's able to join us.
Yep. I don't know where John is today. He had to do something. He's a busy guy. Tell us about your show, program, or whatever we want to call it.
Well, we can call it whatever we want to. I'm starting on July the 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. And right now I'm stuck on the name for my program as Addicted to Our Own Destruction.
Wow, I like that. You came up
That's
with Dare.
I really did.
Yeah, you came up with Dare to Think Out Loud. You actually named this program. And you did it, I think, within 2 minutes. I asked you on the chat, what do you want to call this thing? And you said, Dare to Think Out Loud. And I go, I like that.
Well, that was one of my lucid moments.
Yeah, I have those occasionally.
I do too, but I always find something to drink to help me get away from it.
Speaking of drinking, Chicago Brew's got his own show or program too.
Yeah, I think that's cool.
Yep. Yeah, he's an okay guy. A little uptight sometimes, but who isn't? These days especially. I don't know. So do we have anything to talk about before we get into that piece you wanted to talk about today?
Well, it's like I look forward every week to being able to exchange ideas with folks like you, LB, and John, and Dave, of course, and some other folks. You know, if you sit and surround yourself only with your ideas, you become a pretty stagnant person. And if you aren't challenged on a regular basis by other people, I believe it's like, you know, like a knife. You become very
strong. Yeah, that's true. I like to listen to other people. My avatar I've been using the last couple of years, it used to look kind of Masonic because I had my face split in half. And it was nothing to do with the Illuminati or anything. But someone mentioned that, so I thought I better change it. So I covered my mouth. Now it looks like I have a mask on. I think someone at the station mentioned it. I think it was, who was it? I don't know. Patrick. I think it was Patrick. Pat Rabbit in chat, or he has his own show too on the station here. But yeah, I covered my mouth up, and I did that for the reason of the biblical principle of having eyes to see and ears to hear. And I came up with the statement that if your mouth is always flapping, you're not learning anything. So that kind of fits within what you just said, Mike.
Well, it's kind of hard to broadcast and be tuned in at the same time, LB.
Yeah. So anyway, Dave, do you have any other things to say before we let Mike talk about? He's got a piece like he always does. He pulls a piece out of history that no one knows about. He wants to talk about the Declaration of Independence a bit.
Well, maybe we'll just let Mike go straight into his topic. I wanted to discuss these riots and protests at some point because I think there's multiple layers to this phenomenon. And part of what we're facing is an entire generation, if not two generations, of Americans that don't feel like they have any kind of future in the current system. That's just kind of what's been on my mind this morning.
Yeah. I was talking to Karen this morning, and I realized this about 10 years ago after I started to understand that I didn't have a people, really. Everyone's programmed and about themselves. And after I've done more research, I've figured out it's Marxism. And people have been trained to be self-centered so they could be sold, things. And I knew about communism, but as we discussed last week on this program, Mike asked me the difference between communism and Marxism, and I kind of tried to explain it. But basically, I came to the, explanation, I guess, of saying the Communist Manifesto in its entirety has pretty much been applied over 50 years ago. What's going on now is what I call Marxism, and of course a lot of people have heard cultural Marxism, and I tried to explain it last week as, it's basically anything that's not included in the Communist Manifesto, but maybe Marx had talked about or written about, like destruction of the family. They were out to destroy the family, the communist, or Marx was. And what we're seeing now, I believe, under this so-called cultural Marxism is anything that causes chaos is in that category. Because I look at it as maybe this multiple genders and things of that nature. I mentioned destroying a woman's or allowing a woman to destroy her baby or child. Through the Roe v. Wade case, and I mentioned that the Supreme Court is basically just a panel of priests that give you opinions, and they're opinions because they're twisting law, or they can pull different issues of law in to render an opinion. They're really not, given a solid example of the way it should be, so that's why they vary. And as we know, dealing with Trump and these other presidents like Obama, they're looking to put their so-called conservative judges into the Supreme Court or on the federal judiciary, into the federal judiciary, and they vary from conservative to liberal, is so-called. And like I say, the conservatives don't even know what they're conserving. But some might think the Constitution, some might be Christianity. And that's true to a point, but as we've talked about before, both parties pretty much work together as one. So it really doesn't matter because it's all going the same direction. And I think we'll get into that a little more today. Having said that, Mike, do you want to start in on that piece you want to go over?
Sure, LB. One of the things, and I was thinking about this earlier today, if we need a barometer to judge of the character of the quote-unquote leaders of this country, I don't think anything can come close to being that barometer other than actual speeches of these people who we call our leaders. And while I am not a huge fan of John Quincy Adams, as Secretary of State in 1821, guys, 199 years ago on July the 4th, or at least in commemoration of July the 4th, John Quincy Adams gave a speech to the Congress. And I would like to read for you just the first paragraph, and I would like for you to think as you hear this and compare that with some of the wonderful misquotes and absolutely asinine statements by George W. Bush and Joe Biden, and the fact that Obama thought there were 57 states in the union, and some of those recent people in your recent history. But think of this first paragraph as it compares with what we hear today from our elected officials. And I start, and I quote, "And now, friends and countrymen, if the wise and learned philosophers of the elder world, the first observers of nutation and aberration, the discoverers of maddening ether and invisible planets, the inventors of Congreve rockets and shrapnel shells, should find their hearts disposed to inquire, what has America done for the benefit of mankind?" That's the first paragraph. And, you know, I am struck by the intelligence of these people, although many of them use their intelligence for nefarious purposes, especially Alexander Hamilton. But when I look at these wordings, and then to listen to how he answered that question of what has America done for the benefit of mankind, in 1821, he said the same. He said, "Let our interest be this: America, with the same voice which spoke herself into existence as a nation, proclaim to mankind the inextinguishable rights of human nature and the only lawful foundations of government. America, in the assembly of nations, since her admission among them, has invariably, though often fruitlessly, held forth to them the hand of honest friendship, of equal freedom, of generous reciprocity." Guys, how much have we changed in 199 years?
Yeah, and we're supposed to think that we're more educated than people were back in those times.
Yeah. Not even close.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned earlier, Dave, and I, you know, you and I are in total agreement on this. And I told someone the other day, and I got this strange look. I said, "You do realize we are all now slaves on that great federal plantation."
Yep.
Boy, that's true.
So I do not understand, and my very unequivocal statement is this: if at any time in your life you can't say no to government, you're not free. And there is no consent of the governed. I mean, that consent of the governed, those four words, is just absolutely lost on the majority of people. I do not give consent to the government to make a decision on whether I can wear something across my face or not. You know, I just thought the other day, I'm a real fan of old Westerns. I thought the other day, what if in the old Westerns everybody had a mask instead of just the stagecoach robbers?
Yeah. Well, here we are now.
Well, and that is true. And, you know, you see such absolutely asinine and childish statements. Like the governor of Arkansas came out the other day and gave a presentation. He's holding a mask in one hand and a football in the other. And he talks about the great football fans of the state of Arkansas. And then he holds up a mask and he says, "We either wear these or we won't have this in the fall." Now, what's the mentality?
That's incredible, Mike. And you know what that strikes me when you tell that story? It seems to me that a lot of these governors have the guidance from psychologists to help sell this agenda. This is all very planned and concise the way they're doing it.
Oh, yes, Dave. As you and I have discussed earlier, just in private conversations, the psychology of this whole thing, if they do not have the discernment to understand this is one massive psychological operation or a psyop that I believe was planned somewhere 20 to 25 years ago, because the masters of this deception knew that at some point in time, the well was going to run dry, that there were not going to be enough dollars to continue a debt and to make the people think it's going to work.
Yeah, the well is running dry, and there comes a point where printing more and more money, all it's going to do is create inflation and more misery for the people.
Well, and most people, Dave, do not understand that the greatest tax that they're forced to pay every day is inflation.
You know, that, Mike, that is so true. I have this, I used to collect these old Desert magazines from the 1960s and 1970s. A 1965 Mustang with, you know, fully loaded was around $3,400. So what does a car like that cost now? $50,000 at least?
That's a New Yorker's monthly rent.
Right. For a small apartment.
Anyway, right. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No, that's fine. We're having an open discussion. I enjoy that. The point of it is that as we look at that, Dave, and I remember the very first automobile that I bought myself was $2,700, brand yep. new. And I thought, well, I've just aged myself, I'm sure. But I thought at that time, I thought, man, I don't know how I'll ever get this paid for. And I paid at the time, I had saved up some money, and I paid over 50% as a down payment, and I was still afraid of that debt. And it was less than $3,000. And I will promise you that you take the increase, the percentage increase from $3,000 to what that car would cost today, a similar automobile, of $55,000 to $60,000, I will promise you I am not making that same percentage of money. I was not bringing in that same percentage at the highlight of my employment. So, yes, yeah. it's a huge tax on the people.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, another example is, you know, my grandfather bought his house in San Diego, in Point Loma, which is an expensive part of San Diego. He bought his house in 1948 for $7,000.
Well,
and that same house is, you know, who knows, worth $700,000 at least, probably more.
Well, I remember when my son moved out of San Jose, California, and thank goodness he got out of California and he moved to Colorado for his new job. And I remember the house was put up for sale. And he said that within 48 hours, he was offered $20,000 more than the list price from a group from China who were willing to pay cash money.
Yes. And actually, Mike, that's actually a very big thing. There's a tremendous amount of real estate in California that's owned by Chinese. Huge amount.
That gets back to what I said about not having a people. Because like Mike referenced, this is nothing but a commercial plantation. Now, as it always was planned to be, is in my estimation.
Well, I think that came about again, guys, and I know it's my favorite resting place, but people cannot understand that the Constitution of 1787 was a direct blow at all of the ideals of the Declaration of Independence.
Yes, I can see that now.
Yeah, that's very well said, Mike.
I didn't 25 years ago. I knew there was a problem there, but I didn't know as deep as it was.
Mike, can you expand on that some more? Because that's a really interesting concept.
Well, we have, and if you look at all of the source documents and look at the letters between the founders, and I think there is where the key is that to be able to peruse these letters, to look through this correspondence, because we have to remember that in 1785 to 1790, whatever, during that time frame, that the only course of communication other than face-to-face was by letter. And those letters contain the thoughts of all of these people as they communicated back and forth. And so we talk about a convention in 1787 where the people were sent there under directives of Congress to amend the Articles of Confederation. And we know from letters between James Madison, George Washington, John Jay, and Alexander Hamilton, they planned to create a whole new form of government before they ever got there. That's a criminal conspiracy. They conspired to break the tenets of the Constitution they were living under. I don't know how you can trust anyone who is willing to violate the sacred powers given to them by the people of the country they're in, and that they plan from the very beginning to dispose of it, to dispose of the very power that gave them the authority to to even be where they were. And I don't know how you can ever get someone who is ludicrous enough to say, oh, that was inspired by God. Yeah, right. And you see these things, and then you understand that the problems we see today were created exactly by the same group of people we're fighting today. And Alexander Hamilton referred to them as the rich and well-born, or the wealthy and well-born, the aristocracy. They wanted to control everything. And that's what they ended up doing with the Constitution. And they knew that there were only certain parts of that Constitution that they could get the public to swallow in the beginning, but also they laid the groundwork for all of the other stuff that they would add later. And so as Lysander Spooner says, it either authorized the government that we have or it's been powerless to prevent it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So watching fireworks this weekend will fix all that.
Oh, I am sure that it will. With the appropriate amounts of adult beverages, I am sure you can be brought into the comatose state of complete patriotism.
On that note, we have a break. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. My name is LB Bork. We're going to be back in a few minutes after this station announcement. More too. Stay tuned.
Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
freeze. Let the magic rise.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Now we're back. Second segment in a four-segment presentation today of Dare to Think Out Loud. Today is July 3rd. I forgot to mention that last segment, but... Yeah, we're having fun with the Declaration of Independence today and talking about maybe Americans more not being independent, but maybe more dependent. Some people call that socialism. Anyway, Mike, he was Brian tells me he was falling asleep until you mentioned fireworks and patriotism. So now he's awake. He's being facetious, but anyway, yeah, Brian, I've known him for years. I don't know how many years, at least eight, I think. He's been with the station, I think, since it started, but he's been a good listener and a good supporter of People's Awareness Coalition, so I really appreciate that. Keep the faith, bud. I know he's younger than all of us. So
before we move on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want, if Mike could address this, there is a guy in the chat room, Daryl, is saying that, well, all this talk that the cost of living is so much higher through inflation isn't true because the minimum wage was also very low. And I thought maybe you could address that. I think what happened is the minimum wage has gone up, but the cost of living has gone up far beyond the minimum wage. What do you think on that?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. There was no minimum wage until when? And that was government mandated. And where in the Constitution is the government allowed to set wages? That creates a socialist society. Anytime that the government can deal in wages and prices, it becomes abject socialism. I don't understand that reasoning.
Great rebuttal. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it goes to show us that we talked about China last segment and how they're, or was that in the chat room? I don't know. I read it in the chat room anyway. They're talking about how China's buying up land here. And wait a minute, they're communists. They're not supposed to own property. What's with that? That's one of the reasons that people in America don't understand why I say Americans are communist. Not because the government said so or the talking heads on TV said so or didn't say so. It's not because your teacher said we're not. It's because all the planks are applied in America, and they've been being applied in all countries around the world in various means. As Mark said, in different countries, they'll be applied differently, and all the principles have been applied. So I guess my point is you don't trust what these people say. And I said that, I think, on my program this last week on Tuesday, that don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. So you can't trust what's going on out there, folks. Everything's to benefit the elite and who can work the system the best.
Well,
anyway,
yeah,
go ahead.
Different countries have pieces on a chessboard, and they just use them accordingly for what – Well, right. What purpose benefit them, not the people of the country?
Right. Go ahead, Mike. You were going to say something.
Well, no, what I was going to say is I think it is very intuitive that the first minimum wage law was brought to us by that great socialist himself, FDR.
Okay. I didn't know that. I didn't know where that came from. But
I didn't know that either. Wow.
Yeah, the labor unions are part and parcel of the communist army that Marx put together. And there's a place for labor unions, but under strict or, you know, regular law, an individual is responsible for himself. I think the labor unions were put together as an army to destroy more of the, you know, smaller businesses. Of course, they had to be large to have a number of employees, but they were there to harass the smaller businesses and their owners, because regulations were being controlled through government, and the capitalist types could operate more effectively because they had more capital and money backing them up. So, yeah, when they're doing this $15 minimum wage now out in California, which I think is ridiculous, Mike just mentioned the minimum wage is a little out of balance to the inflation rate, but if you look at what people are making in the 1960s, about $8 an hour is a good average right now compared to the $1.25 it was in the 1960s, the late 1960s. But if you looked at the minimum wage from, like Mike said, when FDR put it in place to the 1960s, it didn't vary much, just like the price of gold didn't. I think it was like $18 for a long time. And of course, a $20 gold piece was worth $20. So as soon as Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971 is when this inflation crap started to happen. And that can be manipulated, of course, by the market.
Well, guys, let's not forget, in 1932, I think it was, the great socialist FDR commandeered the gold in this country, and he forced the people to turn in their gold under penalty of law. And I still cannot find in the Constitution where it gives the government the right to seize people's private property when there's no crime committed. But FDR, being the socialist that he was, got it through without any problem. And then he purchased some of that gold from private individuals, usually at the rate of around $24 to $27 per ounce. And then as soon as he got the gold in hand for the government, he raised the price and set the price, which again is total pure communism or socialism. He set the price for gold at $35 an ounce, which it stayed there until Tricky Dick made some kind of arrangements to change it. But when it comes to minimum wage, guys, let's take one look at something. If everyone is entitled to a living wage, as the politicians like to say, if we're going to say that, why don't we just say that everyone is entitled to a new home and a Mercedes? I mean, philosophically, what's the difference? You are entitled to something you may or may not earn, and you are given something regardless of your effort and your abilities. And to me, that's the very essence of socialism all over again.
Yeah, it's control by government. No, I was just going to say it's just control by government. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, no, I want to actually build on what you're saying. It's control by government. And Mike, could you give us a differentiation between fascism and communism? Because I am starting to not see a whole lot of difference between the two forms of government.
Well, I can only give you my definition. And to me, I don't even like the word communism because, well, I guess we're now living in communes, but that's the basis of the word. I prefer Marxism versus fascism. And I think today, if you want a great look, if you want a great comparison between the two, look at America's two political parties. No one embraces Marxism more than Democrats, and no one embraces fascism more than Republicans.
All right.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if we look at who installed the communist system, it was the Republicans. And I said in my book, when I started laying this stuff out, today I say the Democrats are just useful idiots of the Communist Party, which is the Republicans. And communism, the blueprint for capitalism, in my estimation, is the Communist Manifesto. So Marx said socialism is needed for communism, and all communists say that. But we look at what's transpired, and you know, the Republicans, of course, are capitalists. And like Mike said, the Democrats are looked at as socialists. So that's Marx's socialist base. And of course, the Republicans are the fascist base, as Mike said. But the government's fascist. So you know, you look at what they put. For example, it was on the dime. They had the fasci on the dime. Lincoln's memorial. The chair he sits in has a fasci on each side of the arm. And also in the House of Representatives, there's fasci on each side of the speaker's chair. So the government itself is fascist. So it doesn't matter if the Democrats or it's Republicans, they're both fascist. And it's been fascist since day one. Mike, you said the Whiskey Rebellion was kind of an authoritarian act by the United States, which was unlawful. And fascism is basically force.
Well, I think that is true. If you want to look at any fascist organization, any fascist-run government, they have a very strong military, and they use that military for world domination or to dominate other countries. And they also use the banking industry extensively to finance that military-industrial complex, and that is a fascist form of government.
Yep. I asked a question to the group.
And what's interesting is, you know, in classical fascism, you have the government working with the corporations. But in communism, there's always a ring of corporations that spring up around the government, too, to produce the mass-scale goods needed for the country. So the lines get a little blurred there. But Mike's differentiation between the way the Democrats used to be at one time and the Republicans embracing fascism, that's very interesting.
Well, one of the things, guys, I think you can see, if you're a student of history, one of the things you will notice is that the things that the socialist branch or the Marxist branch, the things they embrace in government, and I could use the Affordable Care Act, the Patriot Act. Of course, that came under the fascist system but of George W. Bush. But if you look at these, I should have stayed with affordable health care. Let's look at that and let's say, okay, well, that is totally socialist. That is totally Marxist. The Affordable Health Care Act was. And so who was behind that was Obama. But what Obama was carrying forward was what Hillary Clinton tried to do in 1993. And so they just carried forth their system. And then, of course, the Republicans lobbied against it. They campaigned against it. They won elections on fighting against Obamacare, as they called it. And then as soon as Obamacare is there, and John Roberts makes a totally asinine statement, he said that it was a tax when the legislation itself said it was no tax. So there's the great discernment of a black robe bandit. But what we have is the fact that now and shortly thereafter, the Republicans embraced affordable health care. Of course, let's go back to the first governor who got basically what was Romney care through a state. And he's no Democrat, maybe in not by name, but he's a socialist. And so he's the first governor and the only governor to this point to enact a statewide assault weapons ban. And so he does that, and then he comes up with the precursor to Obamacare, and the Republicans embraced him in 2012. Where's the differentiation? How is that any difference whatsoever that he came up with both of those? And as a matter of fact, that was discussed in the 2012 campaign, was the fact that when people would attack Obama and say, well, look, you know, blah, 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 you're standing for affordable health care. And then they had the very great defense. Well, look, a lot of this was patterned after Mr. Romney's plan. So, guys, there is no difference in these guys. They all are supporting the same thing. But when it comes to affordable health care, you had all of these people in 2012, 2014 who were Republicans who campaigned against Obamacare to get votes and to get elected. And as soon as they came to the first vote to fund Obamacare, they all voted to fund it. So why would, if you were philosophically against something, why would you contribute taxpayer dollars to fund something that you philosophically don't agree with? And then if you will remember, later the Republicans came up with their own Affordable Health Care Act. So, guys, if you can't read through this, the Republican Party was never against affordable health care. It was a political plum or football that they could kick back and forth and make people think that they were actually doing something. It's all a huge...
Yeah, Mike, I agree. And when you really get down to what this Obamacare was really about, if you distill it down, it's about government controlling the healthcare industry. And that ties into what we're facing today with forced vaccinations coming possibly and this whole COVID crisis that we live under.
Well, I wouldn't say that the forced vaccination is possibly coming, Dave. I don't think there's any doubt about it. It's just another step in their psychological operation. And I guarantee you, by the time they play with the minds of Bubus Americanus out here, by the time they get these people fired up, your neighbors will be willing to shoot you if you aren't willing to take a vaccination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a problem with policy instead of law. And that's what's being delegated right now or implemented on people. This whole thing, as Dave mentioned, you're quoting Mussolini. He says fascism today would be the merger of the government or corporations with the government. And that's what's happened. They use the communist blueprint or, template to create this system so they could bring people in to the government with socialism. So once they're socialized and they have control over them, the corporations are going to profit from what Marx's ruling class does. And the same thing happened to Rome, by the way. They were a republic. And the lawyers, according to Rudolf Sohm, who wrote to Institutes of Roman Law, back in the 1800s, the late 1800s, he said the same thing had happened to Rome, is the lawyers brought the corporations into the law of persons, and that's what happened with the 14th Amendment. We were kind of operating as a republic before the 14th Amendment, and we went into a full empire mode under the 14th Amendment. So the same thing happened to Rome has happened here. And they just copied it, is what they did. Same situation.
Well, and LB, you know, I was just commenting to Mike this morning that I'm coming to the conclusion that every government ends up becoming an empire, no matter how small the country might be. They run it as an empire. And once that starts to happen, the well-being of the individual population doesn't mean a whole lot. What matters is
right,
keeping the empire and expanding.
Right, right. That's it. Feeds the wealthy or the well-born, like Mike said.
I have a question. Mike, how familiar are you guys with Smedley Darlington Butler?
Smedley.
Oh, that's yes. Like yes, I know.
That's like Snidely Whiplash. I don't know about that character.
Okay. Oh, a fascinating person.
Smedley Darlington Butler. What do you know about him, Dave?
Well, at the time, he was the highest decorated military man living, I believe, and he was involved in a couple of things. One thing was the March of Veterans. I forget what they called it, but the March of Veterans on the Capitol, demanding that they get their pensions, I believe. And then he was also involved in this plot where the DuPont family wanted to overthrow FDR and tried to recruit him. How's that for a start?
Well, that is a great start. He was the, as I remember, he's the only two-time recipient of the Congressional Medal of Honor from the United States Marine Corps. And ironically, Smedley Darlington Butler was put in for four Congressional Medals of Honor, and two of them were lowered to the Navy Cross. So highly unusual for anyone of that stature to have been put in for that high an award and to actually have achieved two. Yet, for all of that, he is very seldom mentioned, and most Marines have never heard of him. And as you also alluded to, Dave, in the 1930s, he was contacted by the I.E. DuPont family and several other wealthy corporation owners, and he was offered, as I remember the fact, $500,000 to go out and to recruit enough veterans to overthrow the U.S. government. And the I.E. DuPont and the other industrialists wanted to replace the government, the Marxist government of FDR, they wanted to replace it with a fascist government. And that was in their definite intentions. And so Smedley Darlington Butler went along with it for quite some time, because he only went along with it so he could find out who the very leaders of this coup were in order to take it to the proper authorities. And ironically, Butler took that information to a select meeting of the U.S. Congress. And so members of the U.S. Congress sat and listened to him as he prepared his case and as he laid out his evidence about this attempted coup of the government. And they told him that they would get busy on it. Thank you for contacting us, blah, 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 blah. Well, we also have to remember that in 1938, Smedley Darlington Butler was up for commandant of the Marine Corps until he publicly criticized Mussolini and Stalin. And as soon as that happened, he was asked to resign. So I think that is indicative as well. So Smedley Darlington Butler goes to Congress. He lays this thing out. Congress says, hey, we're going to look into it. Months go by, and Butler goes, well, gosh, are you guys not going to do anything? I gave you this information. I gave you what is basically treason against the country, a treason against the president, and you're doing nothing with it. And so in frustration, Butler goes to the media. He lays it out to several media sources, and the media sources said, okay, well, we're going to Congress. We're going to ask them what happened. So they go to members of Congress, and they say, look, General Butler is out here saying that he brought information about an industrialist coup on the U.S. government, and you guys have done nothing. And the members of Congress said, well, hey, you know, Butler, he's a good old guy, but old Gimlet Eye, he's lost it. He doesn't really have any idea what he's talking about anymore. And we are totally unfamiliar, and we deny that he ever brought such information forward to the U.S. Congress. Well, Smedley Butler dies with that stigma on his reputation. But in 1960s, there was a man, a reporter, researching in the National Archives, and he was researching to do a book on the history of the United States Senate. And in the National Archives, he found proof of Smedley Butler's presentation to Congress, to a select group in Congress. He found proof of that, and it was published in very limited detail anywhere, because the major news corporations didn't want to bring forth that the Congress had been given evidence of a traitorous coup by the industrialists, which means basically the industrialists owned the media as well. But, you know, to me, that's one of the unfortunate stories about, a true American hero. And, of course, you know, he messed up, too, because he wrote that book, War is a Racket, and he revealed the military-industrial complex for what it was, and they didn't care for that either.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that he wrote that pamphlet, War is a Racket, before World War II even began, and he revealed the whole, essentially, scam that war is a for-profit enterprise.
Well, and we have seen nothing but that for at least the majority of my lifetime. The majority of my lifetime, America has involved herself in unconstitutional wars. And people can say, well, Congress authorized that. No, Congress cannot authorize. Congress cannot amend the Constitution with an act. That, if you look at Article 5, you can understand that no act, or Article 7, no act can amend the Constitution. So Congress can pass all of the resolutions that they want to. They cannot take away from a full vote in the U.S. Congress to go to war. And there has the last vote for that was, over 50 years ago. And how many wars have we been involved in since then?
Now, Mike, you said a few weeks ago that the Rothschilds were scoping the North and the South out before the Civil War.
Oh, most definitely. They were involved in both sides. And Rothschild had sent their nephew here, James, I'm trying to think of the middle name, but Rothbard, and I have a copy of the letters that he sent back to the Rothschild family in France at that time, and he traveled north and south basically making an assessment of what was happening.
Right, which is definite preemptory, you know, planning for what happened before it happened. Which is unbelievable. Well, we're coming up.
Well,
on,
and also talks about how he was essentially hired muscle for the United Fruit Company and other big corporations in the wars that he was involved in. He even said that they were just hired muscle for the corporations.
Yes. Well, we're about out of time for this first hour. First two segments. Is there any closing comments on what we've gone over before the break kicks in?
I'm good.
Well, Dave, you had your chance. There's the music. Anyway, this is Dare to Think Out Loud. We're talking about independence, or maybe it's dependence these days. We'll be back after this station break. Stay tuned, folks.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
I will defend myself against their tyranny. Number 3 is my radio broadcast. I'm squarely in front of the public all the time, and they all know what's going on.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
Hello, my name is John Wayne, and I do a broadcast here at freedomslips.com, revolution.radio, called The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
Freedom and fear are at war.
And folks, I assure you, we are in Defense Condition 1. As we journey perilously through this paradigm that we currently reside in, and I ask that you join me every Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for The Unequivocal Truth, DEFCON 1.
We shall never surrender.
Anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard, you've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look!
heart is a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. Oh, what? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, we're back. This is Revolution Radio, as Mike said. Sure do miss Mike Wrigley. Anyway, this is Dare to Think Out Loud, second hour, third segment. And we were talking about that evil, what I like to call the synagogue of Satan, towards the last hour. And we also brought up last hour that that synagogue is in respect to messing up things in the world. One of my favorite videos I find on YouTube is the admission by one Barbara Spector. She's over in Europe screwing up their populations with making multiculturalism, so-called, a thing that the New World Order thrives on. And if we look into what's going on is under multiculturalism is basically a program for the elite factions of any nation or continent or so-called country for the elite to make money off of. And the synagogue of Satan is the one that orchestrates it and puts it together. So they can achieve middleman operations and make a lot of money and turn everyone into resources. And like I said, the top of the pyramid are the ones that make all the money. And we're seeing that with corporate America, the way it works. I think back in like the 1950s, 40s, when things are really taking off, I heard there was like 800 tractor manufacturers in the Midwest. And now, of course, I think there's only one or two John Deere and Case, maybe. And, of course, most of the other ones come from overseas. So, yeah, we might have some workers here, but all the money's going into the pockets of a couple people instead of or a few people rather than a bunch of people. And that's what communism does. It's meant to steal, you know, the middle class's ability to own and run businesses. And that's what its purpose was. Two purposes I found it had were to create a workforce and destroy the middle class. And, of course, this is all done by the elite. Marx, you know, said that's A-okay. You know, the ruling class was just A-okay. The middle class was the problem. And that's because they were hindering the elite's profits or the synagogue of Satan's profits. And so they came up with that grand plan to create one thing. Yes, Dave?
I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to wrap it up. I lost my trend of thought there, or train of thought. But what I was getting at, we're talking about the Declaration of Independence, and that's tomorrow, July 4th. And my point is we've become dependents, and that's all through Marxist socialism, which is the base for communism. As he said, and like Mike says, we're fascist, And I wanted to bring up, I didn't get to say it last segment, but I brought up that the U.S. Great Seal has the eagle as one of its images, okay? And it holds in its talons the olive branch, and then the other talon has arrows in it. And that means peace and war, actually. And the Constitution, as Mike has showed us, has taken away the state's ability to create war or create peace through the treaty mechanism that they installed. And, of course, what we're seeing today is the remnant of the so-called sovereignty of the states being able to quash their own problems, like we saw in Seattle this last month or so, however long that thing was going on. And the way the Constitution's set up, the governor has the ability to call in the federal government to take care of that, but really... that's what saved the southern states in the so-called Civil War, because the governors were on the side of the states or the people in the states. So there's ability for them to do that, which what's that noise? There's a really weird noise going on.
I think that's coming from Mike. If he could maybe mute, I think he's in his car. If he could mute when he's not talking, we'll all have better audio if we stay muted.
Anyway, to finish that up, my point is the United States controls all, or the governors control all things that go on in relation to war or peace in this case. But after the Civil War, the United States went into a full standing army mode, and we've had a standing army ever since. And it's not good, folks. It's an empire, and it's going out to implement, this new world order all over the world. So it's got to be returned back to a republic state one way or the other is my position or my belief. And that's only going to happen through education. Sorry, I was a little scattered, but do you have anything to add to that, Dave, if you were going to say something?
Oh, I just wanted to jump in because you mentioned the name Barbara Spector, who was a very maleficent individual, and she wants to destroy the fabric of Europe, and for some reason she reminds me of a praying mantis. That's about all I can say about her.
Well, she's working for the Synagogue of Satan, or she's a member of it by birth, so that's her job to cause chaos and... there's going to be, two groups of people in this new world order, the so-called chosen ones and the goyim, which is basically animals or workforce for the elite. And in my estimation, the elite factions won't even own anything in the future. It's all going to be run by the Synagogue of Satan or the chosen ones. That's the plan. And it just takes a while to get there, unless people decide to stop it, which that's been my goal for 20 years now, to educate and try to get people aware of what's going on and exercise their right to self-determination, which is recognized by international law. And right now, people have forgot the law, and they're letting these people get away with this, and it's working. We're under corporate domination right now in policies, and the law is being ignored totally. And they even tell you that. I think, Dave, haven't you heard, or even Mike, that wearing a mask is all voluntary? There's no specific law that requires one to do it, but the policy is that you should wear it, and that's what's ruling over the population right now. That aside, being it ineffective and a scam, I think it's just a training exercise for what's to come in regards to making Americans do the will of the New World Order, which is totally subservient action and actions by the people. And there's nothing independent about that at all. So think about that when you're having your barbecues tomorrow.
Anyway. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify something. So you said that the United States has had a standing army ever since the end of the Civil War. Is that correct?
Yes. Actually, Hamilton said in the Federalist Papers that we should be aware or afraid of standing armies. A matter of fact, in the Constitution, it said they could only finance army for 2 years, and then they had to review it and see if they wanted to continue it. Of course, they bypassed that.
Wait a minute. They haven't actually bypassed it. Every 2 years, there's a National Defense Authorization Act that does exactly that. Believe it or not, they actually stay with the Constitution to keep their standing army.
Right. I kind of meant that in a roundabout way. They bypassed it by they keep renewing it. And thank you for adding that. But that's what I was getting at. That they, you know, why even have it, you know, because they renew it every year. So it's a standing army. Wouldn't you agree, Mike?
Absolutely. It's a standing army. And basically, Hamilton said to beware of a standing army. Hamilton told a lot of lies in the Federalist Papers.
Yes.
He actually wanted a, look what he did. He and Washington, look what they did in the Whiskey Rebellion. They used their standing army to go collect taxes with, which was exactly what the original Sons of Liberty feared more than anything, because that's what King George was doing, using a standing army to collect taxes. So then Washington and Hamilton do it within 5 years of the creation of the government under the Constitution.
Yeah, so what you're saying is they had that loophole going, and they didn't even intend to not have a standing army.
Oh, there was never any intention not to have a standing army. They intended to have it from the beginning. Now, Jefferson and his Secretary of the Treasury, Albert Gallatin, did an awful lot to whittle that down, and they basically whittled down the army to the bare necessities, but they tried to keep a well-funded Navy, and the Navy is actually the constitutional form of the military, because the Navy is considered a defensive force only as a progressive force.
I agree. That was told to me when I got into the movement 25 years ago, and it made sense because they would guard, like you said, in defense, the waters or the shores of the colony states at the time.
Well, it goes to that old adage, boots on the ground, because the infantry will tell you over and over and over again, you don't own a damn thing till you have boots on the ground. So the founders didn't want boots on the ground. The founders wanted a Navy. And you may bombard a country with your naval ships, but you cannot conquer that country without foot soldiers. And that is what the founders wanted to prevent, was the fact that we would have foot soldiers, because they knew if soldiers could be used to dominate another country, those soldiers would be used to dominate their country.
And having a standing army is also a necessary prerequisite to try to create an empire.
You can't create one without it, Dave.
Yeah, it's a conqueror.
There you go.
Got to conquer other countries. Karen's asking about, say that about the Navy again, please. I don't know what portion of that she wanted repeated.
I think she was referring to, is that it's a defensive force? Is that what Mike was saying?
Yeah,
it's a defensive force. The founders knew that it was a defensive force and that it would be used for defense of waterways and for defense to protect commerce. Of course, Jefferson ran into a problem that with the Muslims, but he even admitted then that he violated the Constitution in how he dealt with that situation. Mm. But a Navy is a defensive force, and it was designed as a defensive force because it is there to defend your waterways and access to your avenues of trade.
Yes. As long as you brought that up, Yeah, there's one thing about the Seventh Amendment people don't get. And I saw this on Wikipedia, too, at one time. Of course, that's all controlled, and they had taken it down. But the Seventh Amendment mentions common law. And just for you people that study the Constitution and whatever, I've seen this misused so many times. They think that it's because the common law is mentioned in the Seventh Amendment, it means that we have right to the common law in the states, but that's not what it was for. From what I understand, actually Jefferson wanted to bring the common law out to sea, so to speak. He wanted common law juries or a common law jury in maritime instances. So they put the Seventh Amendment in there to afford people in admiralty type situations, which dealt with commerce, of course, to have a common law jury instead of one judge judging it, which, of course, if you study international law, admiralty law only has one judge. So that's what the Seventh Amendment is all about. Each state has had to adopt the common law themselves. Louisiana was the only country or state in the Union that didn't do that. They adopted Napoleonic law instead. So that's one sign of the common law, but it also shows that each state is independent of the others and the so-called United States. But of course, that principle has been lost the last 150 years. And as Mike has laid out throughout the last several months that you know, they always wanted this one nation under fraud, as I call it, but they didn't really get it sealed up into totality and, you know, a real legal mess until they put the 14th Amendment in place.
Well, in their moves for deceit, guys, I think it's critical that we learn that in the past 10 years, the federal courts have started referring to, when they mention the common law, they don't even touch on what we know as common law. Now, precedents by the Supreme Court are considered to be common law in a lot of writings. So they have manipulated the words again to affect their purpose.
Right. You gave me a quote a little while back on some, I think it was Irishman that talked about that common law principle. Precedent law was believed to be common law. Mike.
Yes, sir, I did. And I don't know, it might take me a minute or two, but I'll try to see if I can find that again.
I've got it here if you want me to read it.
Okay, please do.
Yeah, this is Mike's research. Case law often used interchangeably with the term common law refers to precedents and authority set by previous court rulings, judicial decisions, and administrative legal findings or rulings. All these precedents make up case law. Stare decisis is the doctrine of precedent. And that was circa 1700 by Jonathan Swift. He was an Anglo-Irish satirist whose father was a lawyer, I guess. But they're doing the same thing today. An Amgier gentleman, I found a Gentile man. I found a statement that federal law or federal common law, there's really no such thing as that. And it kind of ties to what Mike put together here, that it was a non-entity, it said. But it was intriguing to some legal scholars. And I paraphrased what the Amgier said, but basically it said that. There's no such thing as case law that makes up a so-called common law. It violates due process. And, you know, the courts, where I've seen the courts use case law, the circumstances or the facts might be different in that case to just pull some, you know, so-called precedent out of a case or a court statement out of a different case, you know, because the facts of that case might be totally different. So it can apply to that particular instance. So it violates due process case, the so-called common law And Mike, I think you were saying that they're eliminating the term federal common law now. They're just calling it common law, you're saying?
Well, the federal courts are calling precedent common law and vice versa.
Right. So
it's deceptive. It's another move to because we have all these people, you know, on various agendas talking about the common law of this, the common law of that. Well, if the government can co-opt that phrase and say that, well, OK, yeah, we're going by common law. It happens to be precedent. Ironically, one of the things I find that we brought up in this discussion, and I thought about it, was the original Article 6 of the Constitution. In that article, the judicial part of that was originally written by Luther Martin, an attendee at that, who was Attorney General of the state of Maryland. And he put together what was absolutely a brilliant form for the Supreme Court in his original writings. Of course, Alexander Hamilton and the Committee of Style got a hold of that after Martin left in disgust. They got a hold of that supremacy clause and the Supreme Court and just disassembled what Martin had originally written. But the very unique idea that Martin has was that in any Supreme Court case, that a jury would be seated among the people in every Supreme Court case. So the Supreme Court could sit and argue a case, and then a jury would take it, and the people would actually have control of their own destiny that way. I find it remarkable that the Federalists worked their butts off to make sure that didn't get through.
Hmm. Dave, do you have anything to add to what we just talked about? Or
No, you guys keep going. This is interesting. I was just thinking about what a fraud the Supreme Court really is.
Oh, it is.
When, for example, this Ruth Bader Ginsburg woman, she actually defended NAMBLA in legal cases before she became a Supreme Court judge, which, you know, is the
that's
National
Marxism.
Man Boy Love Association.
Yeah, that's total Marxist.
So that's the caliber of people we have on the Supreme Court.
Well, like I said, the Synagogue of Satan, which she's a member of, they're out to destroy the Christian people. And that's just, you know, that's just an example of it right there.
Well, guys, as an appellate court justice, Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote an opinion that she thought that sex between children over 12 and adults should not be a crime. And yet, when she came up for confirmation, that was not mentioned. And what wonderful Republican senator said that Ruth Bader Ginsburg would be the most powerful, the best U.S. justice in the history of man, none other than Bob Dole, you know, that wonderful conservative. And she was almost overwhelmingly, I think there was one vote against her with several abstaining. If I'm not mistaken, she won like 96-1 her confirmation. And her former, why was that not discussed, that she said that she thought that sex between children over 12 and adults should not be a crime? And yes, Dave, you are right. She was on retainer by NAMBLA for years as a private attorney.
You can't talk about that because it'd be anti-Semitic.
She's like the Einstein of law. She's that much of a genius, huh?
Well, you know, she was a methodical and still is. And the fact that they have allowed her to stay on the Supreme Court with all of her health issues and the fact that she has been known to fall asleep during the fact that she falls asleep during hearings and is still allowed to vote is a criminal offense, in my opinion.
Wow. Yeah, I've seen footage of her falling asleep at some event a couple years ago. She was just nodding off, you know.
Come on, guys. I almost fall asleep during the program here sometimes.
All right. Come on, LB. But you don't get to vote. But LB, the difference is you don't get to vote on my future. You don't get to vote on laws.
Oh, well, who said? Else. Who said? I'm just kidding. Anyway. So what other things can we go into? We got a break in about 3 minutes, but we should maybe talk about this independence thing compared to dependence a little more. We've been talking about the structure and how corrupt it is. And before we go into break, Mike, I think on the program we did on Tuesday, you mentioned something about the biblical principles about how people are destroyed. Do you remember that?
Hosea 4:6.
Yes. My people are destroyed for their lack of knowledge.
Yes, and they have rejected knowledge.
Yes. And that's what's going on with this mask fiasco right now. Like I referenced, this is basically corporate policy. And what the 14th Amendment did is, again, it gave the corporations powers under Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And the people of the states were brought into that same law of persons law form. And it's under Title 1, Section 2, or Section 1, excuse me. Title 1, Section 1 takes care of basically the Section 1 of the 14th Amendment. And everything in statute today is pretty much governed by that law of persons. And if you look at the body of law that covers that, there's body politic government and body politic corporate. And people in the body politic corporate are considered legal entities. So people are not regarded as so-called really natural persons anymore. They're a corporate entity. And that's how they're controlling everyone. They're looked at as not really people anymore. They're controlled by, this law form that's foreign to even the original Constitution. And that's how they're getting away with all this. Everything they do is done by policy, and it's a corporate policy. And as you know, when you go to work for corporations, they have their set of rules that you have to live by. So when they're writing executive orders, they really don't apply to the people, but they do because they're part of the body politic, or what I call the social contract under the 14th Amendment, the Communist Association, as I call it. So this is a real mess, and because people don't want to know these things, they're going to keep under this dependent system that they created. Got a break. Be back in a few minutes after these station announcements. This is Dare to Think Out Loud.
From now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning, and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Travel
travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and Earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
I want to thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
All right, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, we're back. This is Dare to Think Out Loud. Today is July 3rd, and this is Revolution Radio. Thanks for joining us. This is the last and final segment of this edition, and we're talking about... Maybe not so much independence, the July 4th, you know, thing that everyone celebrates, but more dependence, you know, being a dependent. I pulled a paper up that I've gotten into, or I wrote rather, a few years ago. It's called Are You Sui Juris? And a lot of people in this movement have screwed this up. Someone just asked me about the sovereign citizen, as far as that goes. I'll get into that in a minute if I can. But dependent is contingent on another, subordinate, relying on or requiring the aid of another for support. Dependent children, example. Hanging down, dependent, also dependent. One who relies on another, especially for financial support. I know some people think that they're not on welfare, but... The income tax, which is a Marxist tax, or a communist tax, if you will, it didn't exist until Lincoln brought it into fashion back in during the Civil War period. But, yeah, they're taking Social Security money from you and saying, well, that's for your old age, which that's a total scam to get you to pay income tax. And there's a long history on that. But... you're dependent. You're saying, I can't save my own money. I'm putting it in with the government so they can take care of me when I get old. Again, you're dependent under that principle. And again, they've done that, so you have to pay the income tax. It's a dangled carrot to, you know, steal your labor, basically. Anyway, that's another long story for another long, long day. I don't know if this is going to be a long one, but a guardian is in that paper. Are you sui juris? One that guards, watches over, or protects. People are wanting their police departments. That's part of municipal law, having a police department. They police the statutes that they pass on you. Law, one who is legally responsible for the care and management of persons or property of an incompetent or a minor. What do they do when they pull you into court if you don't pay your child support and stuff. The government's acting as a guardian, and that's all part of Marxism. It wasn't that way until they placed these agencies in place under the 14th Amendment. Vassal, a person who is held, who held land from a feudal lord and received protection in return for homage and allegiance, a bondman, a slave, a subordinate, or dependent. That's what Americans are. The militia is used to protect their, you know, state and local people, and now people rely on the police department and the National Guard. So people are vassals. You're living in a feudal system. This corporate system is a neo-contemporary feudal system. So everyone's a dependent. Sorry to say, Declaration of Independence is a joke at this point. And that's what my book's about, the Red Amendment, and all this is, you know, just to enslave everyone under this corporate system. And I wrote a paper called, what the heck was that called? The Origin of Sovereign Citizens. Sovereign citizen, to me, is a sting operation for the federal government to come in, and it's worked very well over the past 10 years or so, 20 years for sure. Incompetent people may have been calling themselves sovereign citizens based on a case back in the 90s when I got into this, but the adversary took the term and has used it against people that fight the law or the Constitution, you know, or they bring up law. They want us dumb and stupid, and so the lawyers can and the Bar Association can control us with their corporate-based legal system and keep it in place. So anyone that does that, they called sovereign citizens. So they demonized people that were trying to assert their constitutionally protected rights and keep them in this so-called civil rights system, which is total totalitarianism. I've deemed that civil law is totalitarian because they can control everyone with it. It looks good on its face, but really it's destroying the Christian base that America once had. And that's, we talked about Ginsburg and these black robe thieves controlling things through their opinions, which is ultimately destroying the Christian faith that once existed in the United States to implement Marxism. Anyway, having said that, welcome back, Dave and Mike. Got anything to add to that?
Well, I had a question for Mike. Earlier in the show, he was referencing John Quincy Adams. And right. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that John Quincy Adams also wrote extensively on the threat of the Freemasons to the freedom of the country. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, Dave. That would be correct.
The Masons are useful.
And what were the dangers? Could you expand on what the what John Quincy Adams was talking about, or what he thought what the threat was precisely?
Well, you know, thanks for bringing that up. I had a discussion with a very good friend of mine back in Arkansas this morning, and we were discussing the fact that the delegates to the Constitutional Convention of 1787 were sworn to secrecy about the proceedings, and they took an oath that they would not reveal the machinations of that convention for 50 years. And the question came up among several folks, friends of mine back there, that what would, in today's world, how would you ever get 50-some people to agree to never mention anything for 50 years? Even among the people who left the convention and thought that what they were doing was wrong, they still did not specifically mention anything that happened at that convention. So, you know, this is pure speculation, but we do know that there were quite a few Freemasons at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. And we know that the, like other societies or secret societies, if you want to call them that, they have various oaths. And the speculation was, well, did that, was there a Masonic oath taken on that silence for 50 years? And we know that people who weren't Masons adhered to that silence, and one of them especially was James Madison. But we also know through extensive research that James Madison went back and changed the notes on the Constitutional Convention to make him look better and to take out parts that made him look bad. So even then, they were not published for 50 years. And Robert Yates, who left the convention in disgust in July, and he had kept copious notes on the proceedings up to that time, he also did not reveal anything that happened in those notes. I will be happy to pass along to you, Dave, a pretty concise study that goes into quite a bit of detail about the Masons that were at the Constitutional Convention. The one thing we do know is that George Washington was a Mason, 32nd degree, and that he would not allow anyone to assume the command of general in the Revolutionary Army without being a Mason. And that's documented. So, but we don't talk about that very much. So how much were the Masons involved in the Constitutional Convention of 1787? And did that oath for secrecy and silence emanate from a Mason? That's a great thing for discussion. I haven't been able to find anything in my research that can absolutely prove that it was. But, you know, again, an interesting topic for discussion.
Yeah, and I believe that there was only three degrees in Freemasonry at the time of Washington. Wasn't it Albert Pike that created the 32nd and, you know, upper degree rituals for that?
Well, we do know, too, and I think that is true to some extent, Dave, but we also know that Washington was involved with the Masons laying cornerstones for various buildings throughout what is now Washington, D.C. And we know about the Masonic symbols involved with those.
Well, yeah, the entire layout of Washington, D.C. is a one giant Masonic symbol, essentially, if you go into it. It's incredible.
I agree with that.
Yeah, the man that did the layout for Washington, D.C. was a Freemason, and he did everything along Freemasonic lines. And earlier, you know, LB was talking about, you know, all the fasci in Washington, D.C. Almost every monument in D.C. has a fasci somewhere in it. That symbol is ubiquitous in D.C.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Freemasons supposedly set up the United States, and your buddy, what's his name? Geez, I forget his name, Mike.
I don't have any buddies.
No, well, it was sarcastic anyway. I mentioned it Tuesday and I forgot it. He's with Wall Builders, that character.
Oh, that guy whose initials are David Barton?
Yeah, that one. He was on Crowder this last week, I think it was, and they did a series with at least two or three shows with him, and he's trying to make it like nothing's changed over the years. But, you know, the Masons were heavily into creating the Constitution. But for some reason, during this, you know, there was the Georgetown University, which was Jesuit, put in place the same year the Constitution was put in place. But there's only four or so Jesuit schools up until the Civil War. And after the Civil War, we see In God We Trust come on to the money. It didn't exist until the Civil War because the Masons were supposedly against any kind of religious system. But then the Jesuit schools blossomed to over 40 after the Civil War. You know, the training centers for the so-called Christian people and the economic system that was put in place after the Civil War under Marxism. So it's kind of funny that the Masons are still there. They all run the courts. Most of the judges are Masons. And they have these secret handshakes and do secret things. I've seen them do their shenanigans in court to control the law system. But I look at them from day one as just useful idiots of the synagogue of Satan, which anyone that's done any research know the Jesuits aren't a good bunch either, you know. So all these people to me are just characters that are run by the synagogue of Satan. Because it seems to all lead to the evil under that that religion.
Well, that may be true, and I could be wrong about this, but did not the In God We Trust happen to be adopted by the Congress under President Eisenhower?
I think they put it on the dollar bill at that time, but it appeared on some of the coinage during the Civil War.
I thought it was under FDR that was – no, I think that was all the symbols, the pyramid symbol and everything was adopted then.
Yes, but that was on the U.S. seal, and that was adopted the same time they put the Constitution in place.
Oh, wow.
During the 1787.
Well, my reading says that the In God We Trust was adopted by the U.S. Congress in 1956 – supplanting E Pluribus Unum, which had been in use since the initial 1776 design of the Great Seal.
Now, I think if you go back and look at some of the coins during the Civil War, you'll find it on the coin. Maybe it was just operated under the Treasury Department.
Well, how about you sending me a basket full of those so I can look at them?
I wish I had a basket full of them, because we know they're silver and worth something, or gold.
Ah, hell, you caught on to my plan.
Ah, shoot, I wish I had a basket full of dimes right now. I got a friend, he looks at the pennies these days. He goes, don't give those a real copper. Don't give those to him. But my friend, Will, he's a character. He's noticed that he's finding a lot more copper pennies lately, because people are digging into their – things are so bad that they're digging into their coin jars that they've had for, 50 years or whatever. So he's right, too, because my penny jar has gone down, and I'm not rich by any means. So things are tough.
Well, guys, I don't know if it has been implemented or not, but I got some information about 2 weeks ago that the Federal Reserve is thinking of doing away with coinage entirely.
I've heard something on that, too.
Yes, I saw an article just yesterday from Forbes magazine that was being discussed in Congress going to a digital currency, yes.
The Constitution mandates that they coin money, though, right? Or do they not have to?
Well, they followed that for how long?
Well, I'd say lawful money. But they technically do have the lawful money out. No one uses it, though. And it cost a fortune because of what they did in 1971. And the radio or the TV told him not to use it. You know, Bernanke was asked one day, what are Federal Reserve notes, was the question. He goes, they're a medium of exchange, a medium of exchange. Of course, he sidestepped what they were really getting at. They represent debt, but that's what I think the person was looking for an answer.
Well, and once they go digital, there'll be absolutely no restrictions on what they can do with the currency. It'll increase their power exponentially.
Again, they're going into corporate powers. This isn't lawful by any means, but people don't care about the law. They're, happy being told what to do by the media and the government.
Well, guys, stop and think about it. It was 1862 Currency Act, which stated that Lincoln's greenbacks could not be used for the payment of debt. You could have all of them you wanted to, but you couldn't pay a debt with them.
Because isn't there a clause in the Constitution that says that the states have to pay their debts in gold and silver?
Well, that is probably true, LB, but the point here being with that maneuver was the fact that Lincoln's greenbacks presented the greatest threat to the international banking community of anything. And if I had it right in front of me, I remember that the Bank of London issued a decree in 1861 after he came up with this greenback idea, that they issued a decree about they could not allow these greenbacks to happen. If I remember correctly, it could be found in the Hazard Circular.
Didn't that Lincoln end up dead for some reason?
You know, I think that a great case can be made that Lincoln was not killed by the South, but Lincoln was killed by the International Banking Association.
Kennedy printed some money, too, that wasn't Federal Reserve notes. I've got one.
He got killed, too. He did that after, what was it, Executive Order 11110. He issued those notes that weren't Federal Reserve, and and I'll be damned if he didn't get killed, too.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing, isn't it?
It's a mere coincidence, my friend.
Yeah. Conspiracy theory.
Absolutely.
But they're coming out, like Dave said, in the open now, and they're talking or saying it's a conspiracy. It's no longer a theory.
You don't need to demonize people who believe in conspiracy theories when the majority of the American population is too stupid to know what it is.
Yeah.
My favorite conspiracy theory is the one where they crashed two airplanes into the World Trade Center using direction from a guy in a cave in Afghanistan. That's my favorite one.
That's pretty amazing technology.
Wait a minute. You're getting racist here.
No, that's anti-Semitic.
Well, I like racist. It's got fewer letters. I don't have to speak as long.
Okay.
Less syllables.
Exactly.
Anyway, we're having fun, aren't we?
I would call you a homophobe, but I don't know how to spell it.
No, what's a xenophobe? All these terms these politician shysters throw out. Unbelievable. People fall for this. Unbelievable. About 5 minutes left. Anyone have anything else they want to bring about for this just day of independence that we have tomorrow?
I got a question, Dave.
Okay.
Did you get my email on the balance sheet?
I did. And that is some incredible information. I had no idea about that. Maybe you could go into that a little bit.
Well, I would like for you and I and LB, if he would like to join us, to use a whole presentation or a whole show to discuss that baby.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
Is that a DARE show, or do you want to do it on the Ultimate Remedy?
We can do it whenever you gentlemen decide.
Okay. I'm up for anything to expose the transparency of this government.
Mike, maybe you could just give a little teaser and explain to people what is the biggest asset on the books for the federal government.
Well, that I think is the shocking thing, or should be, to every American out here, that on this balance sheet, when we think about the land and the buildings that the federal government owns, think about all the post offices, think about all of the military equipment, think about the worth of all of that equipment. And then to stop and think, that's not even the number one asset of this government. So what would that asset be?
Human resources?
Nope. Student loans.
Ooh. Ouch. But they're learning a lot, aren't they? They're learning how to be a human resource.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much they're learning, but when you stop and think that the number one asset of this government is the money that's owed to them by young people who can't afford to pay it, that is rather a daunting fact.
Yeah, I heard a couple years ago that they had the home loan bubble, and now it's going to be the student loan bubble is going to be the next big one. The bubble. Trouble.
What was amazing to me in those statistics, and we'll get into those on that show we talked about or presentation, however we want to say it. But what amazed me is the number of people in this country, almost 500,000, who owe over $200,000 in student loans.
Ouch.
Yeah, but they, like LB said, they're learning a lot, so it's worth it, right?
Oh yeah, they're getting all of that. They're getting all of the Marxism that they can absorb.
Yeah, learning about gay sex and underwater basket weaving and feminism and all those wonderful things. Yeah,
underwater basket.
Hey, Mike, let's make sure to mention your show is starting Sunday. Let's mention it again. Sunday, 6 p.m. Studio A, correct?
Well, that is, will start July 12th at 6 to 8, and it will be called Embracing. No, that's another one. I'm sorry. It will be called Addicted to Our Own Destruction.
Okay, so the 12th of July, 6 to 8 p.m., Studio A.
That is correct, sir.
What do
Great.
You say about...
Well, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. You have a saying about Americans. It's not that they're ignorant. It's... What is it, Mike?
Well, I've said being ignorant is not the worst thing about Americans. The fact that they're so damn proud of it is what really kills us.
Okay, yeah. I think I can go along with that. And they sure love it.
That is true.
Anyway, yeah, this has been the July 3rd edition of Dare to Think Out Loud. My name's LB Bork. I've had Mike Gaddy and Dave Scorpio with us today, and hope you have a safe and happy July 4th. And like we discussed, it's more of a Dependence Day, but have fun thinking about your independence. It happened, 240 years ago now, something like that. And remember its purpose, and maybe we can get that back. But it takes education, folks. Thanks for listening. Be safe.
Listening to Revolution Radio.